Hey there, welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're digging into The Expectation Effect by David Robson. Sophie, what's the big idea here?
Hey there, Sam. So this book is all about how our expectations shape our biology. It's not just positive thinking fluff, it's hard science. Robson argues our brain is a prediction machine, and those predictions can actually change our bodies.
A prediction machine? I love that. So like, we're not just recording the world like a camera, we're constantly guessing what's going to happen next.
Exactly. And when reality matches the prediction, everything feels normal. But when there's a mismatch, that's when you get startled or surprised. The brain's always updating its model.
Okay, so where does the placebo effect come in? I always thought that was just for gullible people, but this book totally reframes it.
Right.
Robson says the placebo effect is a real biological response. If you believe a sugar pill is a powerful painkiller, your brain actually releases endorphins. It can lower blood pressure, reduce inflammation, even alter spinal cord firing.
Wait, so swallowing a pill and trusting the doctor's white coat literally triggers your body's own pharmacy? That's wild.
And it gets crazier. He talks about fake knee surgery for osteoarthritis. They just made incisions and sewed people back up, and those patients reported the same pain relief as the real surgery, sometimes for years.
No way. So the expectation of healing was so strong that their bodies actually healed better? That's mind-boggling.
Exactly. But there's a dark side too. The nocebo effect is when negative expectations cause negative outcomes. If you're told a med will cause nausea, you're more likely to feel nauseous, even on a placebo.
So how does that play out in real life outside a lab?
Think about how a doctor delivers a diagnosis. If they say, you'll feel a sharp sting, you brace for it, and you feel it more intensely. Robson says doctors can reframe their language to trigger the placebo instead of the nocebo.
That's a whole new way to think about the doctor's visit. It's like the consultation itself is part of the treatment.
Exactly. And this goes way beyond medicine. Robson has these great experiments about wine. When people are told a cheap wine is expensive, the pleasure centers in their brains light up like they're drinking a vintage bottle.
Oh, I've totally been that person. You think you're sipping something fancy, and suddenly it tastes better, right?
And if you tell someone a gourmet meal came from a fast food chain, they enjoy it less. It's not snobbery, it's the brain's prediction of quality overriding the actual taste.
So what about exercise? I feel like I always expect my workouts to be miserable.
That's the mindset effect. If you think a workout will be exhausting, your brain amplifies fatigue and breathlessness. But if you reframe those same sensations as my body is getting stronger, you perform better and enjoy it more.
So it's not just in your head, it's in your body's response.
Right.
And this is where it gets really huge. The book has this landmark study on aging. People with a positive view of aging lived on average 7.5 years longer than those with negative views.
7.5 years? That's more than a lot of medical interventions. How does that work?
It's about stress and behavior. If you think aging means becoming frail and senile, every forgotten name or creaky joint confirms your worst fears, which causes chronic stress and elevates cortisol, accelerating cellular aging.
So the worry itself speeds up the decline.
But if you see aging as a time of growth, you're more likely to stay active, social, and mentally engaged. Your expectation of a vibrant old age creates the behaviors that make it real.
Okay, so what about stereotype threat? I've heard that term before, but how does it fit into this?
It's basically the nocebo effect on a social level. When women are reminded of the stereotype that they're bad at math before a test, they perform worse. The expectation of failure creates anxiety and mental load that impairs cognitive function.
That's so unfair. But he says there's a fix, right?
Yes. Just teaching people about stereotype threat and reframing the anxiety as a normal response to challenge can completely eliminate the performance gap.
Now let's talk about stress. We're always told stress is a killer, but this book says something different, doesn't it?
Right.
Robson challenges that narrative. He cites Kelly McGonigal's work showing that the harmful effects of stress are largely driven by the belief that stress is harmful.
So if you think stress is bad, it is bad?
In a massive study, people who reported high stress had a higher risk of dying, but only if they also believed stress was bad for them. People with high stress who didn't view it as harmful had the lowest risk of death, even lower than people with low stress.
So it's not the stress itself, it's what you expect from it. If you see a pounding heart as anxiety, your blood vessels constrict. But if you see it as energy for a challenge, they stay relaxed.
Exactly. The stress response is just a tool. Your expectation of what it means determines whether it helps or hurts.
And he says the same about willpower? I've always thought of it as a muscle that gets tired.
That's ego depletion. But Robson says it's largely a product of expectation. When people believe willpower is limited, they show depletion. When they're taught it's not, the effect disappears.
So if you expect your brain to get tired, it will. But if you expect to keep going, you can.
Exactly. Mental fatigue is real, but our beliefs about our own capacity play a huge role in our actual limits.
Okay, so what do we do with all this? Robson gives us a toolkit at the end, right?
He does. And he's careful not to say we can think our way out of cancer. That would be dangerous. But he offers practical strategies.
Like what? I need some practical steps here.
First is just awareness. Once you know your brain is a prediction machine, you can question your predictions. Are you tired because you need rest, or because you expect to be tired?
That's a great question to ask yourself. I'm going to start doing that.
Then there's reframing physical sensations. When your heart races before a presentation, tell yourself your body is giving you energy. When you're sore after a workout, see it as a sign of muscle growth, not injury.
And he recommends self-affirmation too, right? But not the cheesy kind.
Right, not empty platitudes. It's about reflecting on your core values. When you're stressed or threatened, writing about what truly matters to you can buffer the effects of stereotype threat and reduce the physiological impact of stress.
So it's like reminding your brain of your bigger identity, which changes the prediction about your ability to handle the challenge.
Exactly. And he also talks about social expectations. If you expect someone to be hostile, you act defensively, which provokes hostility and confirms your expectation. But if you expect the best, you act warm and trusting, which often elicits that warmth back.
That's the self-fulfilling prophecy in daily life. It's not about being naive, it's about understanding your expectations are active forces.
Right.
And that's the core message. We're not passive victims of our biology. The brain is a painter, not a camera. It colors reality with a brush of expectation.
So the takeaway for me is to start noticing my own predictions. When I'm dreading something, I can ask, is this actually going to be bad? Or am I just expecting it to be?
And if you want to dive deeper into these ideas, the whole library is on the 7-Minute Books app, with over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language. It's just $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 for lifetime access. In the end, the stories we tell ourselves about who we are and what we can become aren't just stories. They're the blueprints for our lives. We'll see you in the next one.